Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
This is Andrea Owen, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Here I am in Africa, and I am in Africa right now. Now, obviously, I'm not while I'm recording this, but when you get this, I'm in Africa, and I'm climbing up a mountain that's 19,370 feet tall, and there is no electricity on this mountain. There are no toilets on this mountain. And we'll be hiking 5.5 days up, 1.5 days down. Unless I trip, then I'll be down in just a few seconds. If you've never read this book, it was written by Beryl Markham. It's called West with the Night. And the first chapter is called Mugwe. And she was the first woman aviator, first person ever to fly east to west across the Atlantic. But she was the first woman aviator in Africa. And I remember this book. I mean, I remember reading it. I mean, I don't have it anymore, but I remember reading it so often. It's a wonderful read, but imagine Africa at night, flying in a biplane in the darkness, delivering oxygen up into the mines. And so much culture here, so much to see. And I've spent a lot of time in Africa. I've spent all up through the north of Africa, all through the south of Africa, you know, Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, and South Africa, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana. So I spent a lot of time here, and my heart's here. It's a wonderful continent. And, you know, after we finish the climb, we will be going on a safari in the Ngorongoro Crater, which they say is Eden on Earth, one of the most spectacular safaris in the world. And then we're going to go out and see the Bushmen, spend some time out in the bush, and get involved in a community project. So that's what we're up to. Again, forgive me for not being here. Well, don't forgive me for that. Just understand. And enjoy the show. Whoever it is, I don't know who it is, but it's someone really cool, and I had a great time chatting with them. I just don't know which one you're going to get first. I didn't plan that out. We'll see what's topical, who's ready, you know, when it makes sense. And thank you. Thank you for being a part of this, and I'll see you on the other side. So as always, I start with this feeling of excitement, and this is a really, I'm really excited about this show because I was hiking up a mountain called Camelback in Phoenix, and I'm chatting to a friend of mine who's a very, very good friend of the lady who I have on the show. And she just done an event that I was at. We had 2,000 people there, and the feedback, it was electric. People were talking about it. People were impressed. They got knowledge. They got information. They got inspired, and they had a great time. So this is one of these rare trainer speakers that have many, many gifts. And so I am really excited to introduce you and welcome you, Mari Smith, to the show.
Thank you so much, David. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, and we were just chatting for a few minutes right before the show, and we were talking about that our paths had crossed before, and I'm really fascinated about this, that a number of years ago, you started on your sort of personal growth journey with Peak Potentials, where I used to work and train, And obviously what you've done is you've gone through and you've expanded and grown and you've really come out the other side and taken everything you've learned and applied it in an incredible way. And I want to congratulate you for that. And I want to ask if you can take us back to, you know, prior to your success, what were you doing and how did you get on this journey where you're living this life today and, you know, an author of a beautiful book and keynote speaker around the world? How did that all come about?
Well, maybe you can relate to this, David. I have this saying that I'm an overnight success, 10 years in the making. Because, you know, it's interesting. People see and they look in and they see this, all the success and the reach and the size of the platform, et cetera. And they're like, wow, you know, it's amazing. You just came out of nowhere. I'm like, no. You didn't see the 10 years of hard work previous to that. But really, I was very much on a mission. I was very fortunate to have an invitation back in 1999 to come to San Diego, California. And I was living in Scotland. My parents are both Scottish. I was born in Canada, though, my first 12 years of my life in Canada. But I really consider myself a thoroughbred Scot. Both my parents are Scottish. So, and then, was 14 years ago now, I got this invite out of the blue to come to San Diego. And up to that point, David, I had always been an employee. I had never run my own business. I thought about it the whole of 98. I was putting into place the preparation to launch my own training company to do personal development training. And you know that saying that luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. I spent months and months, and I was going to the bank to get a small business loan, and I was taking a lot of business development courses myself. And then back then, I was building a website, getting the business cards. And then just out of the blue, this invitation came from a long-lost friend I hadn't seen for a while to come to San Diego. And it's literally like, I love to say to people, there's a difference between a belief and a knowing. And a belief, you know, sometimes a little doubt can creep in and it's very mental. But a knowing is etched into every cell of your body. You just know. And when I came to California, I just knew. I absolutely knew I was supposed to have a new life here. I had no clue how it was all going to work out and how I was going to get
did
visa.
Did you come over, though, was it going to be just a visit or were you coming over to, so someone said, just come and visit. And then in that moment, you had that knowing?
No, he said, come. I think he said, there's a whole other new life for you here. I think you should come to California. And of course, I came in on a British passport and I had to have a return ticket. There's no way they're going to let me in on a one-way ticket.
Right.
And so I bought a return ticket. It was a 30-day return ticket, but I had no intention of using that return portion. And, you know, I just basically got out and I started pounding the pavement. I was flat broke. I did not have much money. And I had a couple suitcases and about 50 British pounds in my pocket and these two friends. That's all I knew. But I just had this knowing. And I started asking around and just like, you know, finding out what I needed to do in order to get myself, you know, properly situated in the country with a social insurance number and a green card and our visa, all that stuff. Within a very short period of time, I got introduced to an immigration attorney who I actually traded. I built him a website in exchange for his legal fees. kind of resourceful. So, but yeah, and then I was just a wonderful network of people that I got connected into and found someone that sponsored me, got my visa within 6 weeks, and it was just incredible. I mean, it was just literally in the zone. And I began the first year I worked with someone else, that the person that got me the visa, and she really helped me and got me involved in all kinds of programs like Landmark and a program called Money and You, and met a lot of great people. And then I did meet a guy and we got married in 2001 and then divorced in 2009. And, you know, it's just one of those experiences wasn't meant to last. But during all that time, I mean, really from about 2000 on, I was an entrepreneur and I'm running a business doing internet marketing consulting, creating information products, teaching, writing books, just really being a content producer. Around marketing. I've just always loved marketing.
But I want to take you back because I really love this story and I wanted to sort of roll out because obviously you and I share a very similar story. I didn't have that 6 week wonder. Mine took a lot longer. But, you know, what I love about that, you arrive here, you have 50 English pounds, which for people who don't understand, it's about $100 back then.
Right.
And you know, you have this knowing And I want to get back into this. And you use this term, you said, and I started pounding on doors, knocking on doors. And I've always been a great believer when you want something to happen, you've got to go knock on doors. And a lot of people may have not really grasped what that means. What did that mean to get up that first day with this knowing? And you sort of have to go into some form of action when you really don't know what the actions are. But give me some idea of what was going on for those early weeks. You know, what kind of things were you doing? What kind of doors were you knocking on? What was driving you? And obviously there must have been a lot of rejections at that time. But, you know, what sustained you through that sort of the peaks and valleys of those early weeks? Although it did happen very fast for you, I can tell.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty versatile. I would say I have a lot of different skills and a lot of different careers in the past. And the first places I was just looking at, you know, different stores that might need some help. Receptionist, sales clerk, anything like that. My background is really administration and sales. I worked at a lot of law offices. I worked for a lot of temp agencies in Scotland as a legal secretary for many years. But I knew to just get some cash. I knew I just had to get some cash flow going, and my friends were being very gracious and letting me stay with them. And one of the things that the key or the linchpin that opened all the doors was that my dad's a professional baker, and I'd always had a fascination with baking. And in my early 20s, I'd gone to night school back in Scotland. And studied confectionery and baking for 3 years. Now, not a lot of people know this about me. It really was just a hobby.
In a white hat already.
But it was a real passion of mine. I'm very, very artistic and creative, and I could make a cake out of any object, you know, an edible, you know, children's birthday or adult cakes. And there was this one bakery, and I had my portfolio. I had this little photo album of all the cakes I had done. And I walk in, and I'm on, this is maybe about 3 or 4 weeks now into the journey here in San Diego. And I go into this baker's, and I'm like, you know, hey, could you use any assistance? I've decorated cakes before. Here's my portfolio. And they're like, yeah, okay, that looks great. No, thanks. We'll let you know. We'll call us. Don't call us. We'll call you, kind of thing. And, you know, I'm pretty spiritual. I mean, I absolutely know that there's a God out there, whatever people want to call it. There's a greater energy that we can tap into. And it was day 29. I knew that my return flight was coming up on day 30. And I again, back to this knowing, but I thought, you know, I'm just going to test it. Day 29. And I'm like, okay, God, I know that I'm supposed to stay here. I know this is all going to work out, but could you just give me a sign? And that was on day 29, and a half hour later, the phone rang, and it was this bakery, and they're like, Mari, we could use some help this weekend. Could you come in and help us decorate some cakes? And I'm like, thank you. That's it. That's my sign. I know it. That's all I needed.
Yeah. Again, what I love about this, and so many people complicate life, they go for that big dream. And you know, the small stuff, you know, my first job here in Canada was cleaning rooms in an Admiral Motel. My second job was working in a fish and chip shop in the afternoons. But so many people get caught up in this, you know, this idea that you said, I got to create cash flow. I've just got to get momentum. I've got to get moving. Yeah. And this sort of detachment from what it was, there was just this first step, right? And obviously that led to greater things. Take us to that next step. So you're in the bakery, you're decorating cakes. Just sort of lead us on a little bit to this journey that you've unraveled in your life.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting, that was just part-time. It was, they were just needing some help. It was over Valentine's weekend. They had a lot of kids coming in wanting little heart-shaped cookies with names piped onto them. And I worked there, I think, maybe like 4 days over this weekend. Wonderful family, a really great, great family-owned business. Of course, my marketing brain kicks in, and they had just gotten this really new, nifty new printer that could print edible sheets of icing. So you could bring a photograph in and then lay it on a cake, and it would be like an edible iced cake. And of course, my marketing brain, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I'm like, I really want to help you guys market. And I go home and I put together this whole marketing plan for them. This was in 99. It was like the website was, you know, having websites and doing online marketing wasn't as anywhere near as huge as it is now, obviously. But I put this whole marketing plan together for them, and I go in then Monday morning and I present it to them, and it's like, he was blown away. I ended up not necessarily working with them, but it opened a few other doors, and again, just a few other synchronicities. It was the wife of my friend that had brought me over, this couple that I was staying with. One morning, it was like 5 a.m., she says she woke up, she couldn't sleep, and she's like, Mari, I'm supposed to introduce you to an ex-boyfriend of mine. My husband doesn't like me keeping in touch with him, but I've got to. Again, there's that knowing. She had this knowing that she had to connect me with this guy. long story short, that's what happened. We went and we meet this guy, he's a very well-connected guy in San Diego. And my friend said to him, Amari's just new to the country. She really needs an immigration attorney. She needs connections. She needs someone that can help her get a job and sponsor her. And that guy introduced me to a ton of people, including my immigration attorney.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So if we roll forward now and we sort of get the idea of your start and you know, your book, The New Relationship Marketing, we realize this, and I love your tagline, how to build a large, loyal, profitable network using the social web. Mm-hmm. This has become such a force in our lives. And, you know, I, in fact, I was reading about Zuckerberg last night. You know, I was reading some of, you know, about, you know, when he went public and everything else like that. But when you see that, how do you describe, when you think of this whole social media, Twitter, Facebook, everything that you're doing, how do you describe it to the layperson? What's its place in this modern society of ours?
Well, I mean, social media and Facebook in particular, given it's the number one, the largest online social network in the world, it really has fundamentally changed how we communicate and connect and ultimately do business on the planet. However, relationship marketing, connecting, networking, meeting new people and then nurturing and building those relationships, that has been around since the dawning of man, since we would sit around the campfire, since back in the day when need that you had was typically supplied by the small corner store, you know, the grocer, the butcher, everybody knows everybody by first name and you connect and you hang out. How's little Johnny doing today? You know, and that's really what these online social networks have allowed us to do is almost like get back to being much more intimate with one another and much more connected and caring. I also think, which is a wonderful thing, because of this connection and caring and this transparency, that businesses of all sizes are being really compelled to operate at a higher level of integrity, a higher level of authenticity and transparency. Like, they just can't hide. If a business screws up, it's all over the web. You know, everybody goes nuts and the Twitter blows up, and Facebook blows up, and you do something out of turn and you just can't hide. And I think, really, quite frankly, that's a good thing. And, you know, it's just always about the relationships and how you treat people, how you can be an example. And I love the saying, I forget who to attribute this to. It might be Tom Peters, that a true leader doesn't create followers. A leader creates more leaders. And I think that it's really possible to do that using social media to empower others, to treat them like equals, to not put them on pedestals or allow yourself to be put on a pedestal.
I love this. I love this idea about this authenticity piece, because it really, as the young people, when you looked at any sort of marketing campaigns today, I mean, there's kind of a BS meter now, where in the old days it felt like fake it till you make it. You know, it was, you know, don't tell them the whole truth. Today it seems like the truth has to be in front. Otherwise, they kind of, you can almost smell it. Is that right? Am I getting this right?
You are absolutely right. You know, you just reminded me of a great line in Seth Godin's book called Tribes. And he said that people can smell the agenda of a leader. So even if you're like, you think, oh no, I'm really doing this thing here, but you have another intent or agenda, people will know. They can actually feel it. They can feel if you're genuine or not. A wonderful mantra that I asked myself, that I learned from my spiritual teacher, a lady called Esperanza, founder of the Soul Institute here in San Diego. And I learned this from her many years ago. And it's simply, ask yourself, what is my deepest intent? And I love to do that before I hit the send, update, post, text, publish, you name it. Anytime something is going out there online or in public, I ask myself, what is my deepest intent? And if it has anything to do with ego or proving that I'm right or anything like that, doesn't go anywhere online. And nor if it's something that I might, actually my 3-point filter, I'll just tell you, David, is that if I'm not comfortable with something being on the front page of the New York Times or a big billboard, found in a Google search in years to come, or proud of my mom to see, then I do not put it anywhere online. You know? I think that's just so important. And so this part we're talking about here with this authenticity, yes, businesses are being called to this higher standard, but every individual, yes, we're being called to a higher standard, but we don't have to live in a glass house. People get in a big uproar about privacy, but it's like, you put it, you're the one that put it online. You can't be expecting privacy if you're putting it somewhere out there online. True privacy nowadays, good grief, is like, you know, you and a trusted friend in the middle of a field with no technology.
So to get through the noise, I mean, because I always feel like there's a lot of noise out there. Yes. And you know, I'm not, what's the word? You know, I embrace technology more and more every day. And I mean, I have to, even to do this as a medium, you know, putting a podcast out 3 times a week, there has to be but before that I was very, very resistant in many ways, but it felt like there was a lot of noise. And so, you know, with Twitter, you know, there's this bombardment of these small messages, and Facebook, it's like everyone's saying everything. You know, obviously, to cut through the noise, is there a thing that you've learned that helps people get through and understand the bigger picture, what Facebook and Twitter, and I love what you talked about, this authenticity and more and deeper, more intimate relationships. But I think a lot of people, you know, they actually are skimming the surface and they're not really getting deeper because they maybe don't understand its place, if you like.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And I think that the best approach is to become known as a source of excellent quality content. If you're the kind of person that, you know, you're sharing everything, my cat rolled over and here's what I just had for dessert, and oh, I'm feeling this way, I'm thinking that way, it's just, there really is a lot of inane sharings going on. And fair enough, if you're just sharing to your friends and you're all relating over this, you know, wonderful sandwich that you just had, it's okay. You know, I don't mean to be facetious or belittle anybody, but if you're out there wanting to really establish a platform and build your business, which to me is the number one reason that I use these social networks, you know, we were able to stay in touch with close friends and family long before Facebook existed. So to me, these are business tools first and foremost. And so being mindful about what you share, you can rise above the noise when you just pause for a second and really think through, is this going to serve my community? Does this add value? Would people find this helpful? Is this going to help them to improve their lives or grow their business? And I think it's better to say less than more. And then at the end of the day, you can be the voice that's remembered, not just heard. And you be remembered because people were like, wow, that thing that Mari shared today, that was so helpful. That really helped me to save time or save money or make money or improve my life.
Is in this same context, just to give people more of a, you know, we if less is more, and if the content, I love this, but I don't want to miss that piece you said about, well, my mom would be proud,
yeah,
or, you know, the New York Times bestseller or on a billboard, you know, if I was going to post something, it'd have to have something I would be proud of or my mother would be proud of for many years from now. But is there a mistakes that are, you know, they're the most common mistakes that you could sort of come up with, apart from, you know, making things just creating noise? Are there other mistakes that people are making that are very common?
Yeah. Well, on that vein, one would be actually talking about business too much and not sharing that much about yourself. And it's common practice that, not common, it's common expectation, I should say, that the users of social networks, they want to relate with you. They want to know a little bit more about you. And when it comes to your personal life, I'm going to use another term here. So we talked about transparency, and transparency in business is important. But transparency in your personal life, you want to do what's called selective transparency. And selective transparency means that you get to choose, you know, what is going out there and what you're sharing. And typically people love to learn about family, hobbies, and travel. So if you can just pepper your business content with updates about family and travel and hobbies, then you'll be giving people information to relate over.
And that's that vicarious thing, right? So many people are stuck in mundane, and suppose when they can travel vicariously through you, or even with hobbies, inspiring things that they've loved or wanted to do, is that why that calls to them?
You know, yeah. A quick example, a friend of mine, Denise, a couple of years ago, many years ago now, in fact, when she was first getting onto Facebook, she's very much a natural introvert, and she was having difficulty knowing how to kind of open up and share what to share nuggets about her life. Very, very private person. And she talks a lot about her business and marketing, and then she's like, gosh, this is not really getting much traction here. And she loves to run marathons. So she's one day, I think she posted a picture of her running shoes, and she's like, I'm just lacing up here for I'm in training to do this marathon. boom, she's got hundreds of comments. People say, oh, what marathon? Oh, my husband's a marathon runner. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, all this dialogue about fitness and health and marathons. And she was blown away. And it suddenly gave her like this feeling of safety to go, okay, well, that's interesting. I can simply talk about this aspect of my personal life and people will open up and relate and get to know me a little bit better.
If you're talking to someone who maybe is, you know, stuck in a job that is not very inspiring for them, they're aspiring to get out, but they're sort of stuck. You know what? You know, I know lots mm-hmm. of people like this, mm-hmm. and they feel that they don't have as much to offer, or they feel that sort of, well, what can I say? That's well, what advice do you give to people like that? What is the advice to someone who feels like they're not living that inspiring life that they can put out there?
I would say two things. The first would be more than likely you have some kind of a cause that you're passionate about, some kind of change that you would love to see in the world. So not necessarily related to your work or your hobbies, but it's something that really lights you up and that you love to talk about. Maybe ideally not necessarily something that's really polarizing that you're going to like really tick a lot of people off, but something you just really have a passionate cause about. That'd be one possibility. Another possibility is simply to share what I call OPC, which is just other people's content. And there are wonderful ways to do that on Twitter. There's Twitter lists. You can create lists, like interest lists, and put people into them. And you can do the same on Facebook. So you could create your own private or public interest list with fan pages and or profiles. And like, for example, I have one called Inspiration. I have another one called Facebook Candy. Facebook Candy is just a term for, you know, eye-catching images with inspirational quotes. So I find like quotes and images are just wonderful ways to express parts of myself that I agree with or resonate with that other people might want to, you know, benefit from. And then again, you know, you can be known as someone that shares really cool content.
So if I'm sitting here right now and I'm wondering, you know, do I spend too much time? Do I spend not enough time? But if I have this understanding, this is a great business tool. How much time a day do you recommend people to be in the social media?
Yeah, well, depending on what phase of your business, because there's many elements, you've got to have a content strategy. We've been talking quite a bit about content. You'll need an engagement strategy. It's not enough to just put the content out there. You need to be responding when people comment, and not just responding, but going out and proactively starting and or joining conversations. And then you also need a promotion strategy so that you're making sure that ultimately you're monetizing all this time spent online. Well, the good news is that as you grow and scale, finding great content is something that can be delegated. It can be outsourced. You can utilize the services of a virtual assistant, a social media assistant, an agency, even depending on your budget. And you can have someone train them. You want to tell them exact kind of content that you want, exact keywords, exact topics, exact sites. And they can find great content for you. Again, this is from the OPC concept, other people's content. And then they can be scheduled through a tool such as Hootsuite. It's one of my favorite tools, Hootsuite. I use it every single day for Twitter.
Is that Hoot, like H-O-O-T?
Yes, correct. Yeah, then S-U-I-T-E. Yeah. They're based actually out of Vancouver, Canada. Very successful company and just wonderful way to pre-schedule tweets, Facebook updates, LinkedIn updates, you name it.
Awesome.
And so then, not like you're putting everything on autopilot, because you don't want to over-delegate the engagement part. So that's taking care of the vast majority of content. Obviously, you want to intersperse your own content in there too. And then the engagement, you know, you could probably get that down to about 20 minutes a day, maybe 10 in the morning, 10 in the afternoon. Set a timer, get really rigorous with yourself. It's just so easy to go down a rabbit hole and you're intending to be 10 minutes on Facebook and, you know, 3 hours go by. You go down all these rabbit holes.
And so if we've got this idea then that there is so much more to learn, obviously in your book, give me the reason you wrote the book and if I was to read the book, what would my outcome be? I've got it in my hand. I've got it to read. I haven't started reading it yet, but mm-hmm. I'm going to Africa, so I'm taking it with me. This is going to be my African journey. But tell me, give me an example of what am I coming out with? What's this book meant to you?
Well, it's really twofold. It's this concept of really the soft skills I have. There's a whole chapter in there talking about soft skills, the new soft skills where there's empathy and there's great listening. There's this modeling and leadership so that you're really putting yourself out there as someone that people want to follow, I think really the secret to gaining a large following is to be followable, to be somebody that people really want to follow. So that's one aspect, is really the people and the soft skills aspect. And then the second is the technical. And I think that's what gives people a lot of fear, is they're afraid of pressing the wrong button, or that how often do they, you know, schedule things, and is it too much, and how much time? And a lot of the technical. So it's basically a blend of the soft skills and the hard skills. And the goal in writing the book, number one, was to put many of my aspects that I'm just so passionate about, is people, skills, and relating. And my motto has been for many, many years is relationships first, business second. Put that all together in a book. And then, you know, my previous book, I've written a couple of books on Facebook marketing, a first and a second edition. It's called Facebook Marketing an Hour a Day. And I really, you know, and I chose that back in 2007. I began very, very deliberately to brand and position myself as the premier Facebook expert. And I've been able to maintain that title, that crown. But the relationship marketing, I wanted to expand. I wanted people to know that I was quote, you know, more than a Facebook expert. So that's what compelled me to put it together.
And so... And so again, if we look at that, we find that today, as you kind of cast a vision, you obviously understood in 2007, 2009, you could sort of see what was coming, positioning yourself this way. What do you see the future? I mean, as we're sitting here today and you cast forward your vision in 10 years and you look at the role that social media is playing, what do you see is going to happen? How is it going to shift, do you think? I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I bet you have great insight.
Well, I think really, actually a friend of mine, I'll quote a friend of mine, Eric Qualman. He wrote a book called Socialnomics. And Eric, he has this quote, he says, the ROI, the return on investment of social media, is that your business still exists in 5 years' time. And I think that's pretty, it's kind of hard hitting, but when you stand back and think about it, it truly is. Fast forwarding 5, 10 years, the companies that have truly embraced social, not just externally, like, oh, we got a Twitter account, but they've embraced social internally, so that all the big brands as well, and no matter what size the company, that they there's this sense of connection and intimacy and authenticity and transparency, these wonderful words we've been using today, that it's coming from the inside of the company and then spilling out into the customers. And again, that whole aspect of the agenda that the customers will be able to feel when the company, all the employees are really aligned with the same vision and values, and you know, and care, that the companies that genuinely, passionately care about their customers and offer a stellar quality product, those will be the ones that thrive, because everybody's going to talk about it on.
Well, what I love about what you said about, you know, the someone that maybe doesn't feel that they have a lot of content to offer. You're going back to what's most important to you, what's your cause, you know, even that as a simple understanding. And the other part that I'm really fascinated by is that really what this is an extension of the soft skills of connection, of how villages grew and how people used to sit around. In fact, when I lived in Spain, you know, everyone would come out on the street in the evening and sit on the street in their little chairs and bring their canaries out and just chat.
Neat.
And isn't that what this is about? This is about continuing the fireside chat. And so if we had more of an understanding that if this is an extension of our authentic conversations, and isn't that what we're learning here? I'm asking advice here, because I feel that's what it is.
100%, David. You absolutely nailed it. I mean, if I could sum it up, it's basically like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that absolutely goes for whether you're a solopreneur or you're a Fortune 500 brand, you know, we use this term in this day and age of social media of humanizing, when a big brand can humanize themselves. I think what we'll see more of too going forward is what's called brandividuals. A brandividual is an individual that represents a brand. And a terrific example would be Scott Monty. He's at Scott Monty on Twitter. He is absolutely synonymous with Ford. He's Ford's social media guy. He's a speaker. He basically is the voice and face of Ford. And he is an exceptional, wonderful person. And when you think about Scott, you think about Ford and vice versa. So I just think that, you know, companies would do well. That he's such an asset. Companies would do well to find their Scott Monty, to find their brandividual, and to really tap into these centers of influence. We're going to see more of that too, influence marketing, if you have a decent following. So,
So brand individual, I mean, is it something where this person, Scott, is he exudes all of those qualities and he stands behind the brand and he just becomes that the person that you associate with the brand? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like he, you know, if you've got questions about Ford, I mean, I was just recently at a conference in Las Vegas and, you know, Scott was one of the keynotes and they've just unveiled a new car and you can go and chat with Scott and, you know, he'll interview you, interview him, that kind of thing. It's the humanization, because otherwise Ford, you think of Ford as cars and a logo. You don't really think about it as people. And so the beautiful thing about a brand individual is that it instantly humanizes a brand and, you know, that people feel like they have this relationship. You know, Starbucks does not a bad job of that. They don't have one specific brand individual, but Starbucks are really friendly. Intel does a good job. Even Coca-Cola, I mean, a lot of major brands are doing really well with the just building that sense of community. Like you said, with the people in Spain, it's like we're all sitting around the street corner chit-chatting and caring about one another and realizing, wait a minute, oh my gosh, never mind the color of your skin or the shape of your eyes or whatever, we are all way more alike than we are different around the world, you know.
And that's the other part I was going to ask you, is because obviously this show goes to 152 countries. Mm-hmm. Looking at the global crossover, languages, whatever, what are you seeing as a global conversation going on?
Well, Facebook actually translated into, I forget the numbers, 40, 50 languages, crowdsourced. They literally had their users convert and translate the language of the whole site. And there's a brand new search product just came out, which is going to be really, really exciting. You'll be able to surface all kinds of really granular content from Facebook. And there'll be language translations there as well. So I really love where a company like Facebook, they really involve their users in co-creation. And when it comes to a global company, yes, language is one thing, but then so is culture, you know. And so I think that the more that companies can embrace this concept of crowdsourcing and really including and involving their customers and prospects and, you know, marketplace at large, just really inviting them to come on in. We want to hear from you. Come and participate. Come and help us co-create the future of this company.
Mm. And I'm quite guilty of kind of hot and cold. In other words, when I'm home and I'm not traveling, I travel a lot, I'm on stage a lot. When I'm on stage, I tend to switch off from everything electronic. I get a sense deep down inside that in some way I let people down because I'm not in the conversation enough, and I sort of jump back in a week later or 2 weeks later or sometimes 3 weeks later. Can you talk to me a little bit about that as far as consistency, the consistent conversation?
Yeah, that's actually one of my keys that I teach. I think that it's twofold. Number one is that you do want to have a break. You don't want to give the illusion that you're somebody that never sleeps and that you're online 24/7. I mean, it's actually feasible to do that with, you know, using a tool like Hootsuite. But I think especially when you, if you're a name brand that people know that you're the person behind the company, or you have a personality-based brand like I do, then I think it's important to be realistic with the time that you have. And to take periodic, what I call digital fasts. So they're actually planned digital fasts. So then when you're actually going on a retreat or going out to, you know, do some hiking or going to another country. If you're going to another country, ideally you do want to share pictures, share the occasional update. People love that. You were talking earlier about this vicarious living, vicarious traveling. But, you know, if you want to shut down for 2 or 3 days, periodically I'll do that. I'll put out a tweet or a Facebook update, say I'm going offline. I'm unplugging for the weekend. I'm going to a spiritual retreat. I'll see you on the other side.
and I love that. By the way, that's our tagline. I'll see you on the other side.
Neat.
There's a little feedback coming out. Can you hear that feedback, by the way?
Not now. Oh, no,
okay,
I can't.
Perfect. Perfect. The question I have as far as monetizing. We've got this idea then we're in connection. We've got the idea then that it's about authenticity. We've got the idea that there's really valuable content, you know, about building relationships, inspiration, leadership. There's all these different components. But we talked about the monetization. And I think a lot of people who are obviously in business, and they monetization is either attracting people to their business. I do a lot of work in the network marketing field where people are attempting to share what they believe in, share their passion, without coming across as some flaky salesperson, which they're not. But finding that balance of monetization. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, and this is the interesting thing, that the monetization part will take time. That's like the headline news and the most important thing to understand to give yourself a reality check. And for many, many years, you know, people would come to me thinking that Facebook was an ATM machine. All they had to do was just pop their card into Facebook.com, you know, their plastic card, and it would spit out money. And that's just not how it works. The money comes from whatever products and services you sell. And so it's important to see these social channels as basically places where you can meet people and gently, very naturally guide them over the little bridge across into your funnel and get them onto your email list. Rarely you're going to be able to put a status update and go, hey, you know, I'm selling this course. It's $500. Click here to buy. People are going to be turned off with that. But if you say, hey, I'm doing a free webinar, come and join me. Here's the date. Sign up here. People, oh, a free webinar? You're giving away free content? Oh, and a topic that I'm interested in? Sure, I'll sign up for that. And then you give them value. I mean, and this model's been around forever, for years and years, long before Facebook came along. So if we can use social sites to give a combination of value-added content, interspersed with a little bit of our personal selves, and strategically and deliberately interspersed with maybe 20% of promotional content that is designed to guide people to get into your marketing funnel, ideally to use social sites as lead generation tools to get people onto your email list. And email marketing, I think it'll be around for a long time to come.
So then if we look at the place of Twitter, I think with you, you use Twitter and Facebook primarily, is that right?
Yes, correct. Uh-huh.
And so if we could describe their jobs. So Twitter has a job, Facebook has a job, and your website has a job. How would you describe the jobs of each one?
I would say your website, we'll start with that one, is absolutely to inform people what you do, who you help, and how you help them. Okay, so if people come to your site, ideally I want to be able to answer this question, one of these wonderful questions asked to me about 10 years ago by a mentor, and that is, if I were to buy everything you offer, how much would it cost me and what would I get for my money? I want to be able to answer that question on my own. I don't need to dig around. I don't need to fill out forums. I want to be able to find out, what do you offer? Maybe you don't have prices for everything and that's okay, but I want to get a general sense of what can I buy on your site and how can you help me? What's in it for me? That's what people are really tuned into that on a website. It has to be easy and informative. But the job of Facebook and Twitter, they are very different. Twitter, because it's short, it's basically like public texting, if you will, because it's, you know, these short, sharp little 140 character messages. The beautiful thing about Twitter, it's all public. So thinking about, you know, who you're conversing with, you find someone you want to connect with, you never know who's watching you. You could get a new contract, a new speaking invitation, a new joint venture, an interview. You could land a, you know, a national television interview simply because someone saw a tweet go by and there was the right person. It was a journalist or something, or media contact. Facebook's a little bit different because the profile is still very much a walled garden. If you're sharing something only with your friends, then it's got limited views. But in the last year and a half, what I love that Facebook's done is they opened up the personal profile and they allowed what they were calling subscribers. They've just recently changed it to followers, kind of copying Twitter. But you can have a public and a private version of your personal profile. And then with the fan page, everything's public. It's all indexed on Google. You can do apps, you can do ads. Really, Facebook is quite a bit more about building community because the content stays there. It's in the newsfeed. It's got a longer shelf life, if you will. You can ask questions and really glean some great answers from your community. Whereas Twitter's a little more difficult because the tweets are flying by real fast, but it's a great, really efficient way to reach a lot of people and to reach specific people. And
So you're starting out, let's pretend someone's starting out today listening and they suddenly hearing you for the first time, that the role all these things play. And I imagine most of us, myself included, have made lots of fundamental errors in our choices and how we either use content or how our setup is, whether our fan page is doing this or even if we don't have that. If you were counseling someone starting out today, if we had a magic wand and can start all over, where does someone begin on this journey to sort of build, knowing then the relationship's going to be built, you know, so we're bringing people into our conversation, and then we're bringing them into our list, into our funnel gently, and then we're able to monetize once we can demonstrate what we do, how we help, and who we help and how we can help them, right? So if you could just sort of give us that sort of, you have a blank sheet of paper. You were starting today with a brand new person. Where do you start someone?
You know, as much as I'm a massive fan of Facebook, I typically would start someone on Twitter, because Twitter is infinitely simpler, and you can be up and running in no time, and you can be pretty deliberate about proactively following targeted people, and the vast majority of them will follow you back. Now, there's some really cool sites out there. One of my favorites is called Follower Wonk, W-O-N-K. It's a wacky name, but it does the job. So followerwonk.com, and you can put in all kinds of keywords of what people would have in their bios on Twitter and as to why, whether you might want to follow them. And you can sign in using your Twitter credentials, and you can follow people that way. There's many, many tools like that out there. That's just one. And you do need to have a content strategy. So we were talking about that earlier, and just pulling, you know, content from different sources, including your own. And so that's, get that started up and going, and be proactively reaching out to people, be using Twitter as a means to just jump in and get started with the content and the engagement and with some promotion. Then I would hop over and I would go ahead and get started on a Facebook fan page. It's going to take a little bit longer to see some results unless you have a budget. If you have a budget, I would recommend maybe $100 a week, or even, you know, narrow that down a bit if you didn't have that much, and buy some ads, because Facebook demographics, I mean, it's the most targeted traffic that your money can buy. You know, I could target women who live in Los Angeles, age 35 to 45, who read the Oprah magazine.
Mm.
I mean, it's just ridiculously targeted. So, you know, if there's a budget there, I would definitely experiment with some ads and to jumpstart your fan base. Down the road a little bit, I usually say between 500 and 1,000 people is the tipping point on any channel, on any list, subscribers, your email. You've got to start seeing some traction. So the goal would be to get to that first 500 to 1,000 as fast as possible. And you might consider doing some kind of promotion, offer, contest. Those kinds of things work well on Facebook, and so that you can really be building your fan count that way.
Mm, awesome. Now, because again, this is not my realm, as you can tell, but I'm so fascinated by this, the authenticity piece, and I'm so fascinated because that's what I'm all about, is this authentic connection, this, you know, discovering and living an authentic life, you know, the kick-ass life, that's the name of the show, is really to allow people to step into in every area of their life. And this is such an important one because it's the daily conversation that most people are having, and it's connecting the whole world. So I am fascinated by it. Is there a question I should have asked you or could have asked you that I didn't, that you would like to answer for me before we start concluding this show?
Ooh, I like that question. Let's see. We've talked a little bit about mistakes. We've talked about the things to do, the things not to do. You know, here's one. The biggest fear, when I many talks I do all over the world and to full-on industries, I've had whole industries tell me that this is their main fear. And that is a fear of, like, not fully embracing social media. And it's the fear of negative comments. What do I do when I get negative comments? How do I handle someone who's publicly complaining about me on my fan page, for example? And my advice is to embrace that. Embrace it as an opportunity to demonstrate stellar customer service right out in the open in front of a whole bunch of other prospective customers. And they're like, wait a minute, you see how that person, that brand handled that situation? And you want to be jumping in there as quickly as possible, using the person's first name, acknowledging that there is a problem, and doing whatever you need to do to make sure you resolve that. People just want to be heard. Fundamentally, they want to know someone's listening, someone cares, my problem's being handled. And it can really go a long way to establishing a tremendous brand sentiment.
You know what I love about this whole conversation is I get a deep sense that we're just scratching a very, very tiny piece of the surface of who you are and your deep. I know that there's a deep spiritual belief in you. I know that there's a wonderful, passionate business acumen that you carry. There's this joy de vivre that you have. And there's, you know, again, the feedback from the students. I was in the same event. Unfortunately, I was working when you were training. But I really get a sense that there is so much more about this conversation, and the reason why you've been able to be the queen, the king, the queen, of this genre, is truly because it's an extension of who you are as a human being. Is that there is so much depth and richness. So, you know, the show is called The Kick-Ass Life, and I'm gonna add, my final question to you is: if you had to describe a kick-ass life to someone, what that would mean to you? How would you describe it? What is a kick-ass life?
Oh, I love that. Well, I would say, David, it is one that puts a smile on your face every day. And you wake up in the morning and you leap out of bed and you are excited. You're excited to dive in, and that you have a fairly clear picture of what the day is going to unfold like. But you're also very much open to all kinds of possibilities, and you really feel in control that you're living life on your terms, and that it's completely abundant. It's abundant no matter where you're at in life.
Awesome. Well, Mari, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. I know you're going to be back on the show. I can sense it. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. And when I do my wrap, I'll let people know how they can find you and follow you. I recommend the book. Again, my girlfriend just started reading it. She thinks it's remarkable, and I can't wait to take it on my trip to Africa. So I'll give you my feedback when I get back. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Truly just a delight to be with you.
Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, whoever it was. You know, and you know, I'm gonna put some more African music on. I just love it. Hey, there's something about it, eh? That's so magical. Anyway, I want to let you know the Kick-Ass Life Adventure Club. It's gonna be a go. April 2014 looks like is a date. Ecuador, Galapagos Islands. It's going to be about 14 or 15 days, and we're just finalizing details. If you want to be in Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands with me and experience a kick-ass adventure club, that'll be our inaugural. I can't do it this year. You know, I wanted to do it this year. I just don't have the time. I'm traveling a lot anyway. As you see, I'm away this time. I'm in Australia for a month. I just got a lot going on. And so, you know, that's going to be the start of the Kick-Ass Life Adventure Club. Wherever you are in the world, you know, if you're interested, you know, just chase me down. There's only going to be about 35 spots. That's it. Maximum, maybe 40. And I know that we're looking right now at giving you an experience through three very, very, very unique topographies, the Amazon Basin and out on the Galapagos, the Apalapeque. We're going to be chartering our own boat, and then there'll be an option. If you're a diver, the divers can stay a couple of extra days, and we'll be going out diving on the Galapagos, which has been a big dream of mine. And we thought we'd do both, you know, go down exploring, and those who aren't divers can go home a little earlier. We'll give you all the details, don't worry. But it's that's going to be a go for us. Ecuador, Galapagos Islands, April 2014. And again, I want those first 35, you just be passionate, great people, people who want to go on an adventure and see the world in a unique way, and be a part of this. Let's travel together. Let's get to know each other, hang out, and we'll record some shows together. And I invite you to come along. I invite you to be a part of this, but I want you to chase me down. I'm not going to sell this thing over and over again. It's not how I am. I want you to understand that this is a big deal for me, and I've been talking about doing it for years, taking people into the world and crossing things off their bucket list. So I hope you enjoy the show, knowing that me, I am a wee in Africa. So, you know, I hope that your bucket list is active, and that you're making sure that you realize that life is really quite short. And we never know how short it is, but there's a lot to do and see. And Dreams can be, any dream you have, you know, can be accomplished. And it's there at your fingertip. I always already believe you already have your hand in this ethereal soup. And everything you ever want, every relationship, everything is right in there. We just have to get on the same vibration. It's called entrainment. We actually entrain. We bring to us those things that we think about and we're deeply passionate about. And the things that we are certain about. And so get certain that you're going to create the kick-ass life, the life of your dreams. And know that, you know, this is a long journey. I don't think of this as a sprint. I think of it, I keep trying to change the music and I can't. There you go. But I think of this as a marathon. And I really appreciate you being here. I'll see you when I'm back from Africa. And again, listen in. There's going to be some great people on the show over the next time I'm away. And if I can get something home to you, I will. It'll be right there from the mountain, from these great people. And I'll be recording those songs live. So I will see you, ladies and gentlemen, on the other side. And remember, you know, be kind to yourself. Come on. Manage those thoughts. You know, give yourself a kick in the bum. Goya. Don't forget Goya. Get your ass off the couch. Go and attack life by the horns. Live your dreams. Go for your goals. You know, rattle those cages, you know. And you got to fail forward. Jump, you know, it doesn't matter. Nothing's going to be easy in the beginning. Every master was definitely a disaster. And you're going to be crappy at stuff before you're good at it. So, you know, I want you to understand that. And I'll see you on the other side. I'll see you when I'm back.
That was kick-ass.
Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook/The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter @The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
That was kick-ass.